Hello, music fans. Hey, welcome to episode number 10 of Bands on the Radar. I am really pleased to kick off the new year with a very special guest for the podcast, Alex Williams. From the beginning when I started the show, Alex is an artist that has been on my hopeful list, and with some good fortune, we were able to make it happen this past week. His new album, Waging Peace, is receiving a great deal of critical acclaim, and has even caught the attention of the Paramount Plus show, Yellowstone. We spend time discussing the record, along with his musical and career journey. He is such a gifted songwriter and a great guy as well, and we just both happen to share the same hometown, which makes this episode even a little more special. The title track from his 2017 album, Better Than Myself, is playing in the background. Alex and his band are true road warriors. I literally caught up with him as he was in his van about to head out to Kansas City. We had a great conversation, and I know you're going to enjoy it. So let's get to it.
Well, I was told not long ago, my songs are better than myself. Someone told me not long ago, my songs are better than myself. That the reckless way I'm living, it don't match my melodies. That the written words I'm singing, they ain't got no honesty. It's all candy from a jukebox that's burning down in hell. They said my songs are better than myself. Well, I was told not long ago that my songs are better than myself. 'Cause if a song...
Well, Alex Williams, thanks for joining me on Bands on the Radar. I really appreciate you hanging out with me for a little bit. And
thanks for having me, man.
Absolutely. Awesome. I'm catching you literally just about to go on the road here. And so where are you headed right now?
I'm actually in Indianapolis right now. Okay. We are heading out to Kansas City at Planet Knuckleheads tomorrow night.
Yeah, okay.
That first show of the year. So.
Yeah. Looking forward to that, I'm sure.
Can't wait.
Yeah, you had a small break because you've been on the road and then had a small break. It seems like a lot of folks take some time off around the holidays, and then you've been on the road, took a break, and back out.
Yeah, our last run, I think we did a run of shows with Whitey Morgan and Grand Rapids and Detroit end of December. So
cool. Yeah. I saw your show at the Vogue. It was your album release for Waging Peace. Just take me back to that. And I talked to your dad a little bit after that show and got some sense of what you were thinking ahead, but share your recollections of that and just how it turned out for you.
It was amazing, man. Obviously it's been 5 years since we've come out with anything new. Mm-hmm. You know, the first record came out in 2017. So it's been so many changes have happened in that time, and to be able to, play at the Vogue, celebrate the new record and you know, that many folks coming out to support was amazing.
Yeah,
really, you know, a deeper sense of being grateful. Mm-hmm. For sure. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the healthy reminder of how many folks in town really supporting what we're doing, because it's a hard thing to measure elsewhere. You know, we're still out there.
Yeah.
But it was an amazing experience and such a great night.
Yeah, it was a great night. Yeah, from start to finish.
I love the Vogue.
I've seen a lot of great shows at the Vogue, a lot of great shows. And as it turns out, and you may know this, I ended up talking to Isaac Rudd, who did a short set to open up. I ended up talking to him a couple months ago, maybe, and had a great time. Talking to him and Tim Messersmith, actually, so for the podcast. Mm-hmm. So that was a great time. So, and I know you guys are pretty tight, so... Yeah.
Great.
Cool. Let's spend a few minutes talking about your background. You and I share the same hometown of Pendleton, Indiana, just a little bit northeast of Indianapolis. As you look back on that now, how does Pendleton inform what you're doing, or that small town atmosphere inform what you're doing?
Well, you know, I've always loved Pendleton. I mean, I feel like I'm telling you something you already know. But I had lived in Nashville from 2009 until about 2018, so I'm back in Pendleton now. Mm-hmm. And it feels great. It feels good to be back home. being in Nashville for that long and, you know, experiencing that type of thing and how that whole town works and was great. And, but, you know, we finally got to a point where I didn't need to be there anymore. I didn't, you know, I was really kind of yearning to get back home.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I'd spent enough time there. So it feels good to be back in Pendleton and, you know, such a historic place. It's inspiring.
Sure. Sure.
Within itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. So,
yeah. And I'm not sure I had this maybe lined up for later, but one of the things, Alex, and I know you from a distance, I've watched some video, I've seen you play a couple times, and I don't know if this is accurate, but you strike me as someone that's not in love with the music business. You're in it for the music, to go out and play shows and write great tunes and do that part of it. But the business part of it is like, man, it's a necessary evil. Is that accurate?
It's more than accurate, man. I definitely not. I don't know much about the business at all, and I don't think a lot of people do. I mean, it's always changing. I think just, you know, there is an aspect of things being in place on that side of the back end, but it's not how I'm wired. You know, I'm
sure.
My passion is writing music and performing it, and yeah, I mean, that's kind of the goal, you know, to answer the question. So, but, you know, it's a learning process. We've learned a lot for better, or for worse, you know, over the last 6 years.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So you picked up guitar. I've seen you say, and I know some of these questions you've answered 1,000 times. So, but you picked up guitar around 15, 16, 17, somewhere in that area.
Yeah. I really started out, you know, probably when I was 10 or 11. Had gotten my first guitar. It was like a Krait Electra. Stratocaster.
So a little younger than that then. Yeah, you were 10 or 10-ish.
Well, I mean, right about, you know, taking it seriously and really starting to write songs and figure that whole process out kind of started around that time, 15 or 16. And,
Yeah, what were you playing at that point?
Oh, you know, your run of the mill, you know, Jimmy Buffett covers.
Okay, sure.
Everything. Yeah. Philip, because, you know, I had done that talent show at the high school in Pendleton, Wintertainment.
Yeah.
And I had performed kind of like the first song that I had written at the time. I think it was called Back to You. And then after that, it just kind of pivoted into starting to play local bars around town, you know, the Ambets.
Sure, yeah.
Play the Ambets. Learning covers and that whole thing.
Yeah, cool. Okay. Are you self-taught on guitar?
I had some lessons. I don't know if you're familiar with a guy named Kevin Boyer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He doesn't know Jaron me, but Kelly. I know his name for sure. Yeah.
Jaron Kelly, too. He's a...
Oh, yeah.
Also a musician in town. Sure. He's in a band called Bigfoot Yancey. And,
yeah.
I think he's my cousin in some weird way, but, you know, yeah, but between, him and Kevin, they were giving me lessons early on. So
that's a great place to get lessons. Yeah.
To play a G chord without him. So,
yeah, right. Well, I've seen you play, like I said, I've seen enough video. I've seen you play live. You look like, you know, your way around a guitar pretty well.
Just do enough to get by, man.
Yeah. I think you might be being modest.
more or less a songwriter and less a guitar player.
Okay. Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Are you, and this may be an odd question, are you left-handed?
I am left-handed.
I thought you were. I thought I saw you signing something left-handed, and then I'm thinking, but you're playing the guitar right-handed, so...
Yeah, that's kind of the standard way to do it. It's still crazy. Guys like Albert King and Hendrix, the upside down and left-handed. Situation's got to be crazy to maneuver. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Cool. And then you, at some point, you had a stop at, is it Belmont in Tennessee?
Yeah. I went there for about a year and a half. Moved down. I mean, I was looking for just a means to move to Nashville. at the time. I'm glad that I had enrolled there. I mean, I met a lot of fantastic, world-class musicians. I mean, it's a great school for players. And the first band I was in called Williams and Company, I met all those guys. They were all kind of jazz influenced players, jazz bluegrass influenced players, and we kind of, that was really the first experience I had playing with a band was through going to school there. So,
Were you a singer then, or were you just doing some picking in the band?
I was trying to. Between that and I had actually started playing downtown on Broadway there in Nashville with Tootsie's Orchid Lounge, and thought that that was the
ticket.
Best thing you can get, you know, and I was like, see you later, Belmont University. I'm glad I made that choice, because I wouldn't be in this place now.
Cool. Okay. In my opinion, and I think a lot of other opinions, you're able to craft a pretty good song. Tell me about your songwriting process.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah.
Some days are work, and some days don't.
Is it a discipline for you?
I took the words out of my mouth, man. I think it needs, if you're going to be a songwriter, it needs to be treated like a job, you know, and it's taken until the last couple of years to realize that, to where if you don't, if you do it consistently enough, there's bound to, you're bound to find some songs that you can hold on to.
Right.
I think that's a whole other learning process within itself that never ends.
Sure.
I'm always trying to explore new avenues, and have accepted the fact that, the majority of the songs that are coming out are not going to be great. I mean, it's just how it goes.
Yeah.
And, but it's fun. And that's the most important part, is just, as long as it's fun and you're being honest about what you're saying, and you're not thinking about someone else,
right?
That it's never going to steer you wrong.
When do you, because some of the songs on the newest album, I think you solo wrote three of those, the others you co-wrote. How does that work? How do you know when, hey, this is, I'm on my own here, or I need to work with someone? Just explore that a little bit for me.
Well, I mean, during, specifically for this record, during the pandemic, the initial part of the pandemic, I had been me and my wife's ex-wife's home now, here in Indianapolis at the time. And I just had so much time to really hone in on, what I wanted to say, and considering the fact that I didn't really have a chance to go write with other people, it kind of forced me into that place to have to do it. And, and I'm glad, I did a lot of writing, throughout that, I guess, year and a half or so. Ended up landing on those few songs, made the record. So
yeah,
really cool.
Yeah. Good deal.
Definitely more difficult. Difficult when you don't have that extra voice. Easy to play head games.
A lot more. Can you ever turn it off?
No.
No, you can't. It's in there.
That's human nature. I guess.
Yeah. Do you think about when you're writing, Alex? Do you think? Do you picture it more of, hey, I hear this in the studio, or is this, I see this out playing this at the Vogue or wherever? Is it more of a live thing for you, or is it more of, man, this will tee up great in the studio?
To be honest with you, I've had that in mind before, and it usually doesn't work. These days, I mean, the majority of what we do is on the road. So
yeah.
Yeah, when I try to write a tune, I mean, it's obviously something that all of us want to play live.
Sure.
But there might be one or two that come out that, you know, I would feel like it would be a cool vibe piece for for an album or something like that.
But okay.
Usually it's for the show.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that strikes me is listening through your catalog, is how distinct each melody is. You know, there's some songwriters you kind of go, that sounds a little bit like the last song, or the melody ends up kind of just being the same, maybe with a different chord progression behind it. Not your case. To me, every one of those has a distinct melody, different chord pattern. And is that fair?
Thanks, man. I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm not sure that I can, I'm not trying to be different than it comes out that way sometimes. I think, long story short, I think everything's been done, one way, shape, or form, before, but I mean, there is, if you're being, I try to chase melodies that are interesting so I don't get bored. Get bored with just kind of the same, settling on a run of the mill kind of whatever comes to mind. I mean, I think that's important, for the song and to have those kind of repeated melodies, verse, chorus, or just to keep it interesting, I guess. Sometimes it's just saying what needs to be said. And not worrying so much about the melody.
Yeah. Do you enjoy being in the studio? next question.
not really, man. No. I mean, I love playing live. I think Sonic elements are very important in the studio. I think just you can easily overproduce something, but I'm not a big fan of being under the microscope. I think, it's just a weird thing. Sure, I mean, that may be subject to change. It's recording has never been kind of my forte. I don't know a ton about it. Just because I've, never shined a light on just trying to get more educated in that department. Sure. It's always just been kind of writing songs and things, but more or less the live thing is what I look forward to.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So in 2017, you released your first album, Better Than Myself, and 12 great songs. I know that was on Big Machine record label, which you're no longer with them. How does that, and we're probably talking more of the business side again, just how did that come about? That's a fantastic record, by the way.
Thanks.
It's for a first effort, pretty good. And we'll talk about some of the players and whatnot, but how did you get the contract, I guess? And how did that all come about?
So I was actually the band that I had mentioned earlier that I'd met from college. We had been playing shows, the majority in town, kind of in Nashville and surrounding cities around Tennessee, and did some runs out in Texas and Ohio and Indiana, of course, at that time. But around 2014, 2015, a manager who we were working with at the time had invited a guy out to kind of the band house that I was living in. We were living with the rest of the guys, and we were rehearsing. The manager at the time ended up inviting Julian Raymond, who is a producer from LA that ended up doing Glenn Campbell's last record. He came out, and he had been he was a staff producer, still is, at Big Machine, and came out and took an interest. And around that time, anyways, I was just kind of getting burnt out on that band and wanting to wanting to go my own path. So it was good timing, and I just felt like it was he had offered up, Julian had offered up going down to a studio there on Music Row, mm-hmm. Called Love Shack Studios. Not sure if it's still rolling or not. Believe it is, but we ended up tracking like 30 to 40 acoustic demos, okay. of songs. And that just talked to Scott Bruchette over there at Big Machine, and Scott decided to or asked me if I wanted to make a record. It wasn't a formal, 7 to 9 album, right. record deal, yeah. or whatever. I mean, yeah. we didn't do the mainstream thing. He just was gracious enough to offer up, making an album. That's what we did, and kind of whittled the songs down, and ended up with that record, man. Yeah. It was, I have nothing negative to say about it, man. I think it was an awesome experience, and obviously not the place for me. And I think, they realized that a little bit as well.
Okay.
But yeah, man, I'm proud of the first record.
Oh, you should be, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. How was that? Did you have a lot of control over that, Alex, were they kind of leading you and you're like, yeah, okay. Or were you like, no, man, I hear this.
No, man. I mean, they were incredibly, nice about it.
Cool. Cool.
It was really just between Julian and I, because we had worked so much on being in the studio recording demos and mm-hmm. things like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Julian and I just kind of got together and figured out what we thought were the strongest, yeah. 12 songs, and that's kind of what happened.
Nice,
so.
Nice. We'll get into the songs here in just a second, or a few of them anyway. But you had some monster players on that record, man. Tom Bukovac. I mean, that.
Tom Bukovac, yeah.
So, how does that happen? I guess the connection's through the producer and all that. But did you know Tom at all prior to cutting the record?
I didn't, man. Yeah. I mean, he's a,
oh my gosh,
one of the best there is. You know, he's yeah. a phenomenal guitar player. There's actually another guy that played on that record too, JT Kornfloss, and he just passed away.
Oh wow! Okay.
Just a couple years ago. Okay. Great guy. So. Mm-hmm. Phenomenal player.
What's he play? What JT play?
He's a guitar player.
Player. Okay. Okay.
But yeah. Mickey Raphael and Willie's harmonic player, and
he's
Dan
on that
Doug
record.
Moore.
He's on that record, yeah. too. Mickey's on the yeah. first one too. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Because Dan Dugmore, mm-hmm. who in my mind is the greatest pedal steel player that's ever lived. Mm. He was on the first record and this newest one, and
yeah,
just a all around great musician. He's 75. I think
I made some notes. 75. He's played with Linda Ronstadt. I mean, he had a list. I checked him out online. He had a laundry yeah. list of people he's played with. But he was in Ronstadt's band for quite a while, right?
He was. Yeah.
That's awesome, man. Great. Real quick story about Bukovac. I saw Trigger Hippie at the Vogue.
Did you?
he was in that band for a minute, and maybe you know that. Had Steve Gorman from The Crows and Joan Osborne,
right. yeah.
and Jackie Green, and I didn't know who Tom was. And I thought, man, this guy's just tearing it up over there. And I went out after the show. Yeah. Of course, I love Jackie Green. I love Gorman. I love the Black Crows. And I go out back and talking, and Tom's just so friendly. And I was asking about his Strat, and he goes, I'm not really attached to guitars. He goes, but that one I'm really attached to. And we just chatted up. And then later I see him online or somehow I'm like, that's the guy I talked to at the Vogue. And I mean, he's this monumental name in Nashville and just says down to
that's
earth.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was cool. I was like, yeah. I can't believe that guy was so gracious just to hang and talk. And it was really
cool. Amazing what some of those guys can do, man. I mean,
he's a monster, man. Just a monster player. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
World class.
Yeah. So, you lead 12 songs, as I said, Better Than Myself. Yeah. I heard you said that was inspired by a former drummer. That's your title track, first song on there, inspired by a former drummer. Yeah. What's the story there?
Well, You know what's funny, man, is you know, him and I have joked about it a little bit now. Okay. We're really good friends.
Oh, is that right? Okay. Like, yeah.
It really wasn't about him. I think it was just something that he might have said in passing out of you know, frustrations about the past. But it's one of those things where you hear something and you gotta put it down and it turns into
a great song. Hellbent for Hallelujah, number two song on the list there. That's a great live song. What inspired that one?
I think around that time, I had written that song back in it's been probably 2015, 2016, me, Neil Cody, and Jimmy Melton, who plays for Jamie Johnson now.
Oh, okay.
We've gotten together and written Hellbent Hallelujah, and that was I was just in a place where, man, I was in a really desperate place, you know. And I was just, it's a song just about, you know, hoping something good's gonna happen.
Yeah.
You know, you know, just you know, determined for something good to happen.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of what sparked the tune.
Mm-hmm. Been dry as some creek bend down in Texas, just a praying.
Reminiscent of that a little bit. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you sidetrack here? You've mentioned some big names here that out of that Nashville scene, or just, do you get starstruck at all? Is it, I mean, like when you meet Mickey, you're like, man, that's Mickey, or is he just another guy to hang with?
Absolutely, man. I mean, he's, you know, I don't know him super well. I've seen him a few times. One of the songs off the new record, I don't want to skip around too much, but we had written gone over to Mickey's house with another friend of mine. We'd written the best thing together, which was great, man. I mean, just seeing all those old videos of him playing jamming with Willie back in the '70s.
Yeah.
Now it's the hell of a guy, man.
Yeah.
Best harmonica.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah. I get starstruck. My hands would be trembling. I can't imagine trying to, you know, be in a studio or work with those guys, and eventually you probably find it's level, but I would be scared shitless.
Level that a little bit, but it's still
incredible.
So
awesome. The sixth track on the record, it's kind of become an anthem for you, A Little Too Stoned. I think you maybe closed at the Vogue with that. Is that a closing song most nights for you? Or tell me a little bit about that song.
Well, you know, we've kind of up until we shift the set list around once in a while.
Okay.
You know, but, you know, actually Ryan Fox, who plays bass in the band, you know, he is kind of the set list maker these days.
Oh, is he? Okay.
Yeah. He's always throwing left field shots in the set list.
Okay.
And, it usually is fantastic. A lot better than whatever I could do, you know,
okay,
right before 15 minutes before the show, scribbling down a bunch of titles. But, okay. we've been playing, usually been, and we'll shift it up now and then. Sometimes we'll play a little too stoned earlier in the set, or
okay,
just depends.
Yeah.
Get fresh.
Yeah. I'm sure that's maybe one of your better known songs, probably because it's been out for a little bit, but it seems like, you know, when you started playing it, everybody lit up. I mean, they knew the song, not that they didn't know the others, but that one, it seemed like it really resonated.
Yeah. It's crazy because I really, to be honest with you, initially I wasn't a huge fan of the tune. I mean, I was pretty passive about it. I thought it was, you know, decent song that, you know, another one getting done with what's next.
Sure.
And I had actually written that song about, my frustrations with this billiard, place called Melrose Billiards in Nashville that closed down, that opened up in 1969 and became like this, I don't know, tiki bar type of place for a second, and then they reopened as the original billiards hall again.
Okay, nice.
It was pretty cool, man.
Yeah, good.
Happy with that.
And we literally could go on about every one of these songs, but the last one on this one I wanted to touch on, Old Tattoo. That's a cool video. I think I've heard you talk a little bit about that. There's a story behind that one. Tell me a little bit about it.
I had written that one about my grandfather had passed away several years ago. I mean, it's just really just about a song. I never really got to know him as well as I wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
He was, you know, he was just kind of a tougher personality, you know.
Mm.
He was a bit closed off, you know. Mm. And it's really just a tune about, you know, wishing would have known somebody a little bit more. And it hits you twice as hard when they pass.
Sure.
Kind of. You don't realize that at the time until they're gone.
Yeah, yeah. Any other of those songs off your first record that you are favorites of yours at this point?
We still play that once in a while. We'll play that few Short Miles song, Bobby's song.
Yeah.
My cousin Carla Ray owned a kind of like a seaside bar right there on the canal down there in East Texas.
Okay.
And I had played some of my first gigs down there when I was, you know, 17, 16, 17, 18 years old.
Yeah.
And there's a fisherman down there that was really good friends with her that I'd gotten to know, and such an inspiring guy to sit down with.
Yeah.
And really loved his energy and who he was as a person. It was really inspiring. And when he passed from cancer, it inspired me to write kind of a story song about him, which really long time to do. I mean, it took about a year to
do. Oh, is that right? Wow. Okay.
Yeah. But I mean, I was really, really happy with that one. Yeah. Sure.
Cool. Okay. It's not last year now, we're in 2023. In 2021, you released a single, Ain't Seen Nothing Yet. Was that a part of the Waging Peace group of songs and you just released it early, or was that something totally separate?
It was something totally separate. Okay. We had songwriter / producer, guy that I had known for several years in Nashville. His name's Marshall Altman. We had written several songs off the first record and I guess Confession off this new one. Mm-hmm. But Ain't Seen Nothing was also one of those, and I didn't have a label or anything at the time. It was in between periods, sure. So we just wanted to get a single out, sure. And that's kind of what.
Okay. It's a great song.
Thank you, man.
You be the judge. Can't hold a grudge. You know that I talk too little. You know that I think too much. You be the first. Don't mind being last. I'll be the loaded question you wished you'd never asked. Cause I got best laid plans and privacies and an eagle you can pet. I got royal blood and symphonies that are running through my head. I got fields of gold that you can roll in a homemade cigarette. Might think you've seen it all, but you ain't seen nothing yet.
It's a lot of fun. It's probably my the most fun tune to play live.
Is it really?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah.
What makes it that way?
I just think it's a lot different than the rest of the set. I'm not really sure, to be honest. I think lyrically it gets a little wacky, and I think that's a lot of fun.
So. Yeah. Cool. Okay. So not too long ago, but late in 2022, you released Waging Peace on Lightning Rod Records, which is a part of New West Records. So are you signed to a deal with them, or how does the record deals work these days?
Yeah. I'm with Logan Rogers over there at Lightning Rod, had expressed an interest in making an album. That's what we did, man. I mean, it feels like home over there, man.
Does it? They're okay.
Fantastic people. I mean, to feel independent and still be involved with somebody else that supports and waves the flag for independent musicians.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And is not just there to, hey, man, you have your part to do. You do this, and we're going to, it really feels great over there, and I've honestly aspired to be independent for a while. I just haven't brought myself to do so. I finally came to terms with myself, and it's time to take some control here. Your own journey a little bit.
So tee up the theme of the record. I mean, I'm sure some of that is in the record here. I'm sure there's two or three undercurrents throughout the record, but just touch on kind of where you were at or where this record came from, if you will.
I think it was a combination of just the times that we've all experienced, specifically the title track, I guess, piece, built off of, finding optimism in dark times and realizing that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. And no matter what that person has been through.
Tripped out TV-8 in the headline, telling everybody that the worst is yet to come. the guilt and shame that jam my brain. A long, hard lesson to remember what's done is done. As consequence, a choice comes with a cost. The chance to change your ways is never lost. Well, if I could start a war by only waging peace, I'd load my gun with all the love that any man would need. Hell, I'd make my way on down below to the belly. Fast lane, leaning on the white line. Never saw the devil till I went out on the road. LA Thursday, speeding through the sunshine. Never really knowing till you're neck deep in the snow. As consequence, a choice comes with a cost. The chance to change your mind is never lost. Well, if I could start a war by only waging peace, I'd load my gun with all the love that any man would need. Hell, I'd make my way on down below to the belly.
Specifically for myself, I got into some things that I was not proud of, and for a stint there on the road, and was ready to make changes, and I think that's kind of where that song came about. But that was also after about a year straight of writing songs every day.
Yeah.
I think it goes back to what we were talking about. Yeah. It's you know, putting in the work. I mean, sometimes I think looking back at this new album, it's, you know, I'm proud of it because I realized that I had really put the work in to write these tunes, and that's why I feel so much more connected to them as opposed to the first one, where I was just kind of, we're going to get together. We're going to try to write a song that's going to make an album.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't so much about, you know, how do I feel about this? What does this do for me?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and Waging Peace, you wrote, that was a solo write on your own too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a fantastic song.
Man. And thank you.
So while we're talking about it, tell me about the artwork. I just happen to have the album here.
That
blows me away, Alex. That is a beautiful record.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, what? Tell me about that. That is fantastic.
So a guy named nickname is EZ, but his name is Zach Nelson. He's an artist out of Austin, Texas, I believe.
Okay.
Has done some other work for bands like Whiskey Myers and Cody James.
Sure,
Whitey.
Okay.
But yeah, man, I just had the idea in mind of, I was like, man, you know, to get a bit of the Midwestern theme in there, but also, you know, the symbolism for a cardinal is usually associated with like a loved one coming to visit you or whatever. But, you know, there's also a bit of an optimistic, vibe attached to that as well, and I just kind of thought about the, you know, the cardinal flying out of the hand in space.
He
blew me away with it.
The idea came from you, and then he ran with it from there and came from that, or ended up with that. That is fantastic. It's just beautiful.
Thanks, man.
Wow. So let's talk about No Reservations. That's gotten some publicity here lately. Tell me a little bit about your association with Yellowstone on that, the TV series.
Oh yeah, they had actually reached out a couple weeks ago. To be honest with you,
is that right? Okay.
And you're wondering if No Reservations could be played, and I was like, of course, well, hell yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was such a great way to start the year, for sure.
Yeah, so which episode is it in? I don't have Paramount, but I've got Peacock, so I don't think I can see it yet. So which episode is it?
It was kind of on the radio at a low volume in the like the bunkhouse on the last episode.
Okay.
On January 1st.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. So how do they pick that? I know you. I think you mentioned Montana in the song. Is that, or is it just, or is there something else? What was the connection, or do you know? They just liked the song and said, "Hey, we want to include it." Or
yeah, I'm not really sure, to be honest with you. I mean, I thought it was awesome, man.
Yeah,
to get that email and be contacted by them to have the tune in there. Yeah. It was amazing, man.
That is cool. Awesome. I first heard this song actually online. I saw the video for it, and I thought, man, that's a great video. I don't know what videos cost, but I thought that one's pretty well put together, and loved that opening riff on the guitar, man. Just is killer.
Vacation, got too many other things to do. Ain't looking for any trouble, but I ain't turning any trouble down. Broke down flat south of Sioux City, then I caught a tailwind Montana bound. Sure been nice to meet you, but I'm good and gone. It's this kind of living that just keeps me strong. It doesn't make a lonesome or wrong. It doesn't make a lonesome wrong. Ain't taking no invitations, ain't too fond of fitting in. I don't blame your hesitation, taking me places you've never been. Can't swim both sides of the river, I can't walk two ends of the roads. The traveling man with a golden band, trying to figure out which way to go. Sure been nice to meet you, but I'm good and gone. This is kind of living that just keeps me strong. It doesn't make a
Yeah, and some of the best riffs are not difficult riffs either, and that's the beauty of it, in my opinion anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's just great song. And so tell me, you've made a few videos. You made one for Rock Bottom as well. Do you see that as an avenue to promote your music, or what's the purpose of a video, so to speak?
Basically what you just said, man, I think it's a visual representation of the song itself.
Sure.
It's definitely a promotional tool.
Yeah. Which makes sense.
But also, form, as a foundation, just a form of expression, another form of expression. For that one was a lot of fun. We went up to Marion, Indiana, to a bar called Wayland's, and a lot of friends showed up.
Yeah, very cool. How long did it take you to, from start to finish, to put it all together? Do you remember?
Man, it was really not too long. It's 2 or 3 hours, probably.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was yeah, just kind of set up in there, and a lot of folks showed up and had a blast. So
yeah. So was the sketch of the whole thing, was that yours? Did somebody bring that and go, hey, this would be great? Or was that your idea?
Yeah. Nielsen Hubbard, who kind of produced, and him and his partner, whatever. They did the record or did the video, and, kind of had the idea in mind. We went from there, man.
Yeah. It's cool.
Video. I don't really have the vision, for music videos. Yeah. I'm not very good at, envisioning that.
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah. But, they did a great job.
It seemed to be a good fit, you know, because that's what the place, most of those people that came out, you know, I've been playing, I had played acoustic shows for those folks up there for years, up in Wabash in that area. So it was awesome, man.
Yeah, it's a great video. We talked a little bit about Rock Bottom. That's probably your newest video, I think. Yeah, so tell me, and in fact, I think I actually met the gentleman and his wife that's in that video. Tell me a little bit about how that one came together.
Yeah, Jarob and Sarah are fantastic people.
Yeah.
That was Nielsen's idea for that.
Okay.
We just did the video.
Yeah.
That one was more of definitely a vibe piece. You know, there was really no story attached.
Yeah.
That song.
Yeah.
I'm happy with how it turned out.
Again, we could go down every one of these songs, and I wish we could, because they're all great. I think we talked about this a little bit. You co-wrote The Best Thing with Mickey. Was that a deal where you're in the same room with him, or were you sharing ideas remotely, or how did that one come about?
Well, me and Bobby Tomberlin, who's also a fantastic songwriter in town that I had met when I was living there, and we had gotten to talking about, he is a country music encyclopedia, man. You talk about just all the old stuff. I mean, there's plenty of guys too that just, we just always, every time we'd get together and write, you know, the first 2 hours would just be talking about old, stories. And Mickey came up and he's like, oh man, I know him, and like, we should go out there and, write a tune together. Turns out, he was living about 5-10 minutes away from me.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, it's basically my neighbor. And we went out there, his house, and, just sat down in his living room. He comes out with like the case of harmonicas, and I'm like, oh, shit, it's about to get real.
It's going to get real.
It's about to get real here, man.
Oh, man.
And, I mean, we just started writing a tune, and that's one that came out. And when we did the demo, he actually played on the acoustic demo. I've still got it.
Nice.
From like 2016. And I could barely focus on playing, man. I was just like, him even playing in his living room is just the reverb and everything.
Yeah. Wow.
Angelic, man. It was
amazing. That's awesome. That's awesome. I don't want to forget, you actually had your band on this record this time too. And I know you had some other players, Danny was on it again, and some other folks, of course, Mickey, but you had your guys on this record too, right?
Yeah. So I didn't have a band, obviously, when the first record came out. So, I was, it is also another element that made it feel a lot more, the connection was there a lot more, just because all of us were involved in the recording. I love every one of those guys that played on there and were in the band. It was awesome.
Yeah, cool.
to have a mix of the band and a few of the guys from the first record were.
Yeah. Felt a little bit like home then, to some degree.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. The last one that I wanted to touch on is Confession. And you mentioned this one earlier. Just a little bit about the background on that song.
Again, that one was, sometimes it's just hard to explain.
Yeah.
Hard to explain because I'm not. Songs like that, I mean, I had written that one before the first album came.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, just right around that time. Okay. With Marshall, who, Altman, who kind of produced and wrote the Ain't Seen Nothing song.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Some people ask about certain songs. It's just like, man, it's sometimes the especially with him, writing lyrics that are so wacky and stuff, they do make sense to an extent. It's hard to even explain.
Sure, no, I get it.
But it feels right.
Well, and I know a lot of folks that write songs will also say, I don't want to analyze it. That's for the listener to analyze. Let it be their song. I've written it. I'm handing it off to you. Let it be what it'll be with you. And And I've said this on a few. I've been so blessed in this in the time that I've been doing this podcast, Alex, to talk to some really great songwriters. And the thing that I tell all of them is that what you do as a songwriter ultimately helps me tell my own narrative. You know what I mean? I listen to the songs and I take something out of that, and then I fold it into my narrative, to my story. So and kudos to you for the ability to do that, where you can put that out there and then we take it on and make sense of it. So
well, thanks so much, man. Great podcast you got here too,
man. Thank you. The last thing I'll say about Confession is one of the parts I love in there, and I don't know if this was, I'm sure it was intentional, but there's a little break in there that's got an Allman Brothers thing going on. God, I love that. I could listen to that all day. That was fantastic.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
I had actually, the song was basically done. That didn't have that section in there for the longest time. We were playing it live without it for a while. And I was like, man, it would be cool if there was a little breakdown section there, and, just kind of, got together, or worked at home and worked up kind of the harmony parts and everything, and ended up playing that and adding it to the.
Yeah, it works great. And you do some other jamming on some of the other songs too. The band kind of gets to exercise some muscle there, which is cool. So just great playing from start to finish on the record. So let's talk a little bit about your live performance in your shows. How many shows do you goal to how many shows you want to do a year? Is there a limit? Is it just what comes at you? You take it or decide, are we doing this, not doing it? How's that work?
I think I love playing shows. I love being on the road. Mm-hmm. So as many as we're able to to play, I'm happy about, it is different being on the road now with my son, but we're also not gone more than a weekend, unless we're going out west. I mean, we're doing two to four show runs.
Okay.
The more the merrier, gotta keep rocking.
Cool. I watched a rig run down with Whitey Morgan last night, and he said he was out 300 days, right, whenever that was filmed. I thought, man, that is a lot of days, man.
Yeah, man, he used to sling the dates, man. A lot of people have, man. I mean, I think there is a point where I don't feel like you have to play 300 days. Think about 150 or 150 to 175, good amount.
Yeah. You mentioned the one song that you enjoy playing, the single that you enjoy playing, like probably the most fun. What other songs besides that one do you say, man, we rock it out on this one, or we just love playing it this way, or whatever? What other ones stand out to you?
Off the new record?
Yeah.
My favorite song that off the album is the last one called The Vice.
Mm-hmm.
I like that one a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. Also Conspiracy, too. I really like Conspiracy.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Okay.
Obviously, No Reservations. Fun.
Yeah.
And I think you've been playing that one for a long time.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure you're ready for something new. It's just that's such a great tune.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. And the night I saw you, and I don't know if you do this on every show, but you played "Give Me Back My Bullets" by Skynyrd, and then you threw in a nice little curveball by Warren Zevon, "Lawyers, Guns, and Money."
Yeah,
and I asked you to put something on Instagram about that, and Blake reached out and goes, man, I need some of that video. And that was all I had was that little snippet of what I put on there.
Yeah, man.
Blake, your guitar player. So how do you, those, and you sounded great on those. How did you, especially with Lawyers, Guns, and Money, how did you pick that one?
Oh, man, I was just going through. I'd be like, man, going through the tunes that I've been listening to consistently and thinking about what might work well for the live setting, and just thought about that one randomly one day, and I was like, man, maybe I'll bring this up to the guys, see what they think of it.
Yeah.
Because I'm never a guy like a dictator type of guy. Yeah. Usually, that's one reason why me and the rest of the fellas have such a solid musical connection is we function more or less as a band, even though it's my name and
it's
not about me. I mean, it's there's I'm only one piece of the puzzle, man. To play in a band and to have that chemistry, I mean, it takes everybody. So I enjoy it being that way.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Of course, "Give Me Back My Bullets," you got to be pretty tight to play that song, and you guys pulled it off. It sounded fantastic.
Thanks, man. Thanks. A great album.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
My favorite records.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. So tell me a little bit about your rig. Just what you're playing. I've seen you play, of course, acoustic. I've seen you play Tele, SG. Just tell me about, because I still think you're a better guitar player than you're admitting to. So I got to go there. So tell me a little bit about what you play, your amp setup, and anything on the pedal board. This is the geek part of me coming out now. So,
well, first of all, I've made many impulsive decisions on guitars. They have come and gone.
I have too.
I don't even have the SG anymore.
Oh, you don't? Okay.
Well, it was just I just don't. It's better to bring it out for a second and give it the time to see if it's sitting in that place for you.
Yeah.
Working.
It feels different when you're playing it versus a Tele or anything else.
Yeah. But man, I've gone through a guild semi hollow guitar that I don't have anymore. And
okay.
I was like, man, I need to get off this thing and just get back to basics.
Yeah.
That the only two guitars, I have three guitars that I bring in on the road. I have a 66 Gibson J50 that I had gotten from Center Stage
Vintage
Guitar in Noblesville. And those other, the kind of the chocolate mocha brown Telecaster. Yeah. It's a 2017 American Professional.
Okay.
Telecaster that I had painted and modified a little bit, and then also have a KLH guitar, which is also one of Kevin's creations at the Center Stage. He had built a tobacco burst. Telecaster. Probably the lightest Tele I've ever felt, man. I mean, it's
which is like a good cyber thing. Bomb. Which is a good thing.
Yeah. But that's those three are usually the go tos. Mm-hmm. I play through a 68 reissue Princeton Reverb.
Okay.
And I don't even want to get going on my pedal board, man. Yep. I've got way too many of those.
Too many, yeah. Well, we can wrap this up.
And good deal, man.
Yeah, we can. Let's talk about what's next for you. And you're on the road. You're headed out, and just what's on the horizon for you and the band?
Well, I think obviously just kind of going out and promoting this new record, and playing shows, and still writing songs all the time, and kind of doing what we do, man.
Yeah.
Nothing any crazier than.
Yeah. Are you you teed up to tour with anybody in particular? Open for anybody? Headline? What's a mixture of all of the above?
It's hard to tell yet. Mm-hmm. We kind of have our handful of shows for the next few months, but hopefully, I'm sure something will come about. And
sure.
Either way, we're looking forward to it, man.
Yeah.
Be blast.
So. Yeah, that's going to be a good time. Be a good time.
Yeah.
What other projects? I know you just released an album. You said you're writing all the time. What is it too early to talk about another album? Or have you got your sights set on that, or just got your head down grinding out on the road right now?
I just kind of got the head down grinding out playing shows right now. Sure. I think I haven't really even begun to think about the next project, but we're definitely going to. Definitely not going to wait half a decade anymore. I'll tell you that.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Although we've got a lot of time to enjoy this new record, so that's cool. But new music's always fun, too. So, what's the easiest way, Alex, for fans to connect with you?
Well, I'm on Facebook, Instagram. You can listen to the records on Spotify. Mm-hmm. My website is alexwilliamsofficial.com. Mm-hmm. You can find all the shows and everything coming up.
Cool. And I encourage I encourage the fans, if you're going to stream it, just go buy it. Buy the album, or buy the download and support the artist. So I'm big about that. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, cool, man. You've been so kind with your time. I appreciate it. I know you're about ready to push the gas pedal down and head out west. So, safe travels. I appreciate you hanging out with me, man, and all the best to what lies ahead for you, Alex.
Man, well, thanks so much. It's good to see you. Good chatting with you.
Yeah, yeah, appreciate
it. Fantastic podcast you got here, man.
Yeah,
thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. All right, we'll talk soon. Thanks.
All right, thanks a lot, man.
Uh-huh. Bye bye. Many thanks again to Alex Williams for making time to talk with me. I am very appreciative for the opportunity. Be sure to check out his website for tour updates. And if you can, catch a show. You will love it. And be sure to follow him on Instagram and Facebook as well. Thank you for checking out this episode. If the spirit moves you, hit like and subscribe for the podcast. And until next time, be sure to keep your antennas up for those bands on the radar.